you can look back and say, like, here's how I lived my life. I didn't just waste it.
I'm your host, Zach Weaver, and this is Made Us. A lot of times on Made Us, I tell stories of perseverance through hardship, and this week is a little different. Joining me this week is Dalton Stanage. Dalton is an insurance salesman, pastor, and most importantly, a father. And this week, we don't share a story of his hardship. We share a story of his solution to hardship, which is fostering kids in need. And like always, we get sidetracked. Talk about beer and my horrifying experience in France. Our conversation today was an insightful one, and there were several moments in this conversation that really opened my eyes. When Dalton talks about his story and how he chooses to live it, it really hits home, and it makes you think. I truly appreciate Dalton joining me for this conversation, and I hope you enjoy it as well. And if you like what you've been hearing on Made Us, go into Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rate and review, and subscribe to the show. And if you don't listen to an Apple Podcast, subscribe in whatever your favorite podcast app is. And don't forget to share it with a friend. Sharing the show with a friend really helps the show grow. And between episodes, if you want to keep up with us on social media, you can check us out at facebook.com/madeuspodcast and on Instagram and Twitter @madeuspodcast. And if you know someone that should be on the show, drop us a line @madeuspodcast@hotmail.com. So once again, thank you for joining me, and I truly hope you enjoyed this conversation with Dalton. It was a fun one, it was an insightful one, and it's one that really opened my eyes. So without further ado, my conversation with Dalton Stanage. Dalton, welcome.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. So before we start talking,
yes,
you got talking about that you're a beer snob.
I do like my beer.
That's awesome. How long have you been into beer?
So I have been into beer probably the past 14, 15 years.
Really?
So I just had my birthday, 39. So,
nice.
Someone just told me this is the worst of the 30s because you're about to be 40. But so started drinking beer. I was like 25-ish.
Yeah.
And it was the whole craft beer scene, you know, kind of I discovered it. And I thought, wow, beer actually can taste good.
Yeah.
So now if it's light, it isn't right.
If it's light, it isn't
right.
I like it. I like it. I don't know anything about beer. I know I've told you that before.
Right, right.
Like, I feel like we've had this conversation recently.
It feels like it.
But yeah, I really don't understand anything about beer. As much as I try, like, I know what I like, but I don't get it. Like, people talk about, you know, this has got, you know, oh, notes of this and notes of that. You know, I don't understand. I don't understand wine either. I got a client of mine that produces wine for one of the local wineries. And it's the same thing. He tells me all these things about, oh, this has got notes of this and hints of this. Right. And I'm like, it all tastes the same to me. It's all dry and icky. And
right.
I don't understand most of it, but apparently I'm an idiot. So that's all good.
Yeah. We discovered that too.
Yes, we sure did. Yes, we sure did. So Dalton, go ahead and tell everybody about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Dalton Stanage, and I live in Bridgman, Michigan, right close to the beach, Lake Michigan, which is amazing and beautiful several months a year.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, for a couple.
See the lake, yeah, a couple months. So I've been married almost 20 years now, and my wife and I have 8 children currently, and I own an insurance agency like a quarter mile from my house. And so it's really nice.
That's a hell of a commute.
Yeah, go to the office. You know, going home for lunch, though, it's sort of a downer because you get home and my wife's working really hard. She works much harder than I do. She actually stays home with our children.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
So I get to leave the house a lot. So you get home for lunch and, you know, it's change a diaper, feed a baby.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of working. It's a working lunch.
Oh, wow.
So then, yeah, and I also pastor a church in our town as well.
Okay. What church is it?
It's called Lake Street Community Church. So it's like it's the oldest church building in town is where we meet.
Nice.
It was like built in like 1879 or something.
Oh, that's really awesome. We were talking about Bridgman, Michigan, which is where we're at, Southwest Michigan here. We have a lot of listeners from all over the place. But for any of our local listeners, if you're driving down Red Arrow Highway, going southbound in Bridgman, you'll see Dalton's big old face on a billboard for his insurance agency.
Yeah, so my big old head is about 16 feet wide, it seems. so Sorry if you have to see my face every day as you're driving on your commute to or to work or whatever. My friends or my kids' friends think it's cool.
Yeah.
You know, they drive by and, you know, they'll Snapchat, you know, my picture. And
yep.
You know, little kids think it's cool, actually. Like little 4, 5, 6-year-olds.
Really?
They think I'm famous, actually. So one of my friend's daughter, she's like 6. She asked her mom if I was the president.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because she's like, why in the world would you think Dalton is the president? She's like, he's on that sign with the suit and he's, you know, so.
Oh, that's yeah. Good. That's really good. I can't say that I haven't stopped and take photos of that as well.
Right, right.
So you said you're a parent of currently 8 kids.
Currently 8, yes.
So are they all biological? Or are they kind of all over the place?
So yeah, we have 4 biological children.
Okay.
And then we have 2 that we were blessed to adopt last year. And then we have 2 foster kids.
Nice, nice. What are the ages of them?
So our biological kids are 18. 16, 13, and 5. And then our adopted children are 2 and 1. And the foster kids we have are 3 and 2.
Wow.
So we have 5 children, 5 and under. So
you guys are saints.
Yeah, insane.
Insane. Yeah, insane. Yeah, I can't even imagine that. You just met my children. So I have a 7-year-old and a now 4-year-old. That's enough. 2. That's enough. Yeah. I can't imagine having 8 in the house. Now, granted, some years are pretty much grown adults now.
Right.
You know,
right.
In the scheme of things, they're pretty much grown adults, but still, that's craziness in that household.
Yeah. So, but you know, once you get to a certain point, you have so many kids, then it's like, oh, what's just add another kid. What's adding one more? Bring him on the team.
What's another one?
Join the team, kid.
That's awesome. You almost got a baseball team.
Yeah, I don't know anything about baseball, but
yeah, you know. Play 9.
Okay, 9.
So you play 9, you got 8. You're getting there.
Oh, nice. We could play 8-man football.
There you go. There you go. I like it. I like it. So you said you have 3 teenagers and then spaced out in a 5-year-old.
Yeah. So we were thought we were totally done having kids. You know, my wife's doctor actually said because we said, well, we weren't planning on having any more when she found out she was pregnant with her. And her doctor was like, if you're not currently using any form of birth control, it's a planned pregnancy. So like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It happens. It happens for sure. You guys not think you could get pregnant or you just?
No, we just were like, whatever. I guess we're done. You know, just.
That works.
Yeah. Got rid of all our baby stuff a week before she found out she was pregnant.
You know, you say that. You talk about you got rid of your baby stuff a week before. My mother ran a daycare for 20 plus years.
Okay.
She literally closed her daycare about 6 months before my wife and I got pregnant with our first child.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was like, oh, awesome. My mom could have watched our kids.
Yeah.
Now she doesn't. So not fun.
Nice.
The foster kids come first or the adopted kids come first? Where did that come in from?
Yeah. So we actually started fostering first. Kind of we were fostering with, we were open to adoption.
Okay.
If it came to that, we kind of came into it at first where we said, if the child needs us for 24 hours or if they need us for 18 years, that's kind of what we're going to, you know, go into it and see what, you know, how it goes.
Nice. That's awesome. So with that process, I mean, where did that come from? Did you guys just one day decide that that was what you needed to do to open your doors? Or was it, I mean, did you guys think about it long and hard or was it just kind of like, hey, this fell in our lap. We need to do this.
Yeah. So we had never given it much thought or any thought actually. Until we saw a few friends of ours, they did foster care and then they adopted their son. And then we had another set of friends that started foster care. And all of a sudden we just thought like about what we believe and how we see the world and everything and thought, wow, we should be doing this. And so it was kind of an immediate decision once it kind of was like the lights went off. We're like, why aren't we doing this? We have enough room. We've been blessed. Why aren't we doing this? And so we just decided to do it. So
that's crazy. I mean, that's awesome that you guys really did that and just put your foot down and decided this is what we need to do and kind of put your money where your mouth is type deal. And I think a lot more people need to do that.
Yeah, for sure. I think there needs to be a lot more people that, I guess, one, you have to think like, why do I live the life that I live? And why do I choose to do the things that I do? You know, and there are people that need help and, you know, am I willing to sacrifice or give and, you know, so.
So did your friends kind of talk you into it or was it just, you just witnessed it and then decided?
Yeah, witnessed and saw their life and what they were doing.
Yeah.
And yeah, we just thought, you know, we're Christians. And so we thought, well, if we say we believe this and what we look in at the scriptures and what it says, like we should be doing this.
Or, yeah.
You know.
So was it like, I mean, I know this is kind of silly to say, but was it like a mutual thought, or was it like you kind of thought about it and then brought it to her, or did she bring it to you, or did you guys just?
I think I brought it to her.
Yeah.
I think so.
Because I can't imagine. That's a strange conversation to bring to your partner, regardless of what it may be. You know what I mean?
Sure.
When you're sitting there going, I think we need more children in the household, and you're going, I feel this way. Let's see how this goes.
You know? Right, right. Yeah.
Especially when you guys already have four children of your own.
Yeah, four.
Four biological children. I don't want to say four children of your own because they're all your children.
But right, for sure.
Four biological children.
Yeah, you know, you have four, you know, kids and... You know, today people have, you know, just a couple kids. That's just standard kind of, you know,
yeah,
practice, it seems. You have one, two, maybe three if you're stretching it. Once you have four, people, you know, start looking at you weird and stuff. And then once you get five, six, seven, eight, we've had 10, up to 10 before at one time. And
wow, 10 children at one time.
Yeah, you mentioned your mom did
daycare? Yeah, my mom ran a daycare, yeah.
So my wife walks around our town she has this stroller that fits four kids in the stroller. And then her friend will walk with her pushing another stroller. It depends how many kids we have at the time.
Holy cow.
So they're walking around town one day, and a lady comes out of her house and asks how that she can get her kids in our daycare. And I was like, I am not running a daycare. So, yeah.
Holy cow. Yeah, I can imagine. That's what it would look like, though, if you got that many kids strolling down the street.
Right.
Oh, man, that's rough.
For sure.
That's rough, man. Your wife is she's a superhero.
Yeah, she definitely is a superhero.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely, you know, you have to have both people on board if, you know, you're going to have 8 to 10 kids at once. Yeah.
Yeah, that's craziness. I can't even fathom that right now. Like I said, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Like, I can't control the two I have. You know what I mean? I mean, I love the two I have.
Right. And
they're not bad kids, but I can't imagine having more than that.
Yeah, you definitely have to have like routines and schedules and structure. It's like,
yeah, what's your day-to-day life look like with that?
So we have, you know, they pretty much wake up, and there's with the little kids, here's kind of how the plan goes with my wife. So they wake up in the morning, get their breakfast right away, and then they try to take a walk if it's like not freezing temperatures.
Yeah.
Like today they walked outside.
Oh, nice.
Bundle the kids up, and you know, so they walk every day. Then they get home, it's about lunchtime, eat some lunch, take a nap, wake up, I'm home, make supper, you know, play a little bit, go back to bed. So,
holy cow. Yeah. Man, my mind is blown. Even just sitting here thinking about it, my mind is blown. 8 kids. That is craziness. You have 2 adopted and 2 foster.
Yep.
On the sets their own, there are siblings.
Yeah, the 2 we've adopted, brother and sister.
Okay.
And then our 2 foster children, our 2 sisters.
Okay. So I'm very ignorant to the situation.
Yeah, sure.
When these children come about, do you know any background on them, or is it just, I mean, it just, I don't want to say, this sounds terrible to say it, but is it just kind of like a crapshoot? They just give you whatever? Do you have some sort of background on these children?
Well, for anyone that's like out there listening that's ever thought about or interested in like doing foster care or adoption through foster care, you kind of get some when you start set things like here's what our family can handle and here's kind of an age range we could probably take or, you know, the level of disabilities that could come with that. So you kind of get some parameters at first.
And that's what you guys are setting.
Yeah, we kind of set some parameters. Okay, we're going to have them younger than our youngest, you know, just because we're new and we're like, okay, we don't, you know, you hear the stories and stuff. But
yeah.
So then when you get a call for a foster child, they're going to be removed from their home that day. You know, they don't even know they're going to leave their, you know, parents or one parent or wherever they're at. These kids have no idea they're leaving.
Oh, wow.
But so they give you a call and they kind of give you a little bit of a rundown of what they know. Like, here's why these children are being removed. Would you be able to take them? And a lot of times they have to call through, like, especially in the county we live in. I mean, there's not enough foster families for as many kids as there are. But they give you a call and say, hey, here's what's going on. You say yes. And then all of a sudden, you know, an hour later, they show up at your door and there you go. There's your new children that you know got to love as your own kids, and
yeah,
you have no idea what they're going to be like, their temperament, what's, you know, their issues exactly. But
yeah, and when these children arrive, do you have a time frame kind of in mind, or is it just, I noticed before you said if it's 24 hours or 18 years you're there for it, but do you kind of know a time frame when it comes to that, or is it just pretty open-ended?
Yeah, it's kind of, it seems to be more open-ended. It seems to be, you know, when they say a short case, we've discovered that's like a year. So, okay. Yeah, I mean, we've had a couple where it's been a, you know, a 24-hour thing or 2 weeks, but a lot of them are
yeah,
you know, longer than that.
So. And a lot of these are just coming from bad homes. Is that kind of the...
Yeah, it's a variety of things. It could be, you know, they had improper housing and or the drugs. A lot of times in our area, it's a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
There's some abuse, some neglect. You know, unsafe environments, things like that. So,
wow, that's a tough situation even for me to wrap my head around right now is to be able to, you know, have these children just basically show up at your door and you guys intake them. Now, I think it's amazing, but to wrap my head around that, the idea of doing it is just mind blowing to me.
Sure.
What's your thought process when you guys started doing that?
So, for people out there that are not religious or have different views than I do.
Yeah.
Totally cool. I get it. Just for us, when we look in like the scriptures, we see God shows himself as a loving father.
Okay.
And so we see that he's the best father. Like a lot of people didn't have good fathers or a lot of these kids have no fathers. And so we see he shows himself as a good, patient, loving, kind. And so we just see that and think about, man, these kids need to have like justice in their life. They need someone to love them and care for them. And so we just jump into it. And that's what gets us through the frustrating times too. Cause you know, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, you say, yeah, I want to do this. It's exciting. Well, you have to have something in your life, some underlying beliefs or something to sustain you during the hard times when these kids are there and they're getting on your nerves and they're not listening to you and they say they hate you or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something, you gotta have something there that you still have patience and you still have love and you still have kindness and you still care for these kids, just like they're your own kids. If your own kid was acting up or telling you they hate you,
you know,
you have to have something there. And so for us, that's what it is. It's, you know, our beliefs in God and things. So.
Yeah. I think patience as a parent is one of the biggest things. And I know I say it, you know, I have my own problems with that, you know, trying to be patient with my children. Now I do feel like I'm patient with my children, but I definitely have those problems. So I can imagine as you extrapolate that to 8 children,
sure,
you know, yeah. It's hard to have that patience. So it's, I completely understand what you're saying with your belief system, regardless of if people have the same beliefs as you or not,
sure.
You know, it still comes down to that core belief of just having those values of patience in dealing with these kids. You know what I mean? Being there for these kids because they don't have whatever it may be.
Yeah. If they're at our house for only 6 months or a year of their life, this may be the only time that they get to see like what a loving family looks like. This might be the only time that they know like that they're going to have food every day.
Yeah.
This might be the only chance that they get. So you got to overlook all the little irritations, everything to show this child, like we don't know where you're going to go from here, but we're going to try to give you the best, you know, start or, you know, fill those gaps.
Yeah.
Have, so.
So the 2 children that you have adopted, now those started as foster children as well, correct?
Yes.
How did that process go?
So we actually picked up the boy from the hospital when
okay.
He was born. He was born with some like cocaine and different things in his system. And so we picked him up from there. And a year later, we got a call that there was a baby girl now born. And we take the baby girl, same kind of issues.
Yeah. Did they try to keep the children together?
They try to,
okay,
but it's not always feasible or it's not always easy for them to be able to find a home that'll take multiple kids. So our very first, so we've had now in the past 3 years or 3.5 years, we've had like 19 different children
really
come through. And so a few have went back to their families and most have went to like families that are going to adopt them.
Okay.
You know, because we cannot adopt every child.
Yeah.
I mean,
you want to.
But yeah, right. But you just can't adopt every child. So our first, when we got licensed, we were getting licensed for one child.
Okay.
And so it was like a 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We get a text message from our licensing workers like, hey, your license went through. And we're like, oh, wow. I wonder when we'll get a call. It was like 3 hours later, my wife calls me and said, hey, they have a placement for us, but they said they need us to take 2. And we're like, what? I thought we were licensed for 1.
Oh,
and they're like,
man.
Oh, they said that's no problem. They can fix that. So we took a sibling group, you know, our first ones,
yeah.
Which they've went and been adopted, you know,
okay.
A good family locally
yeah.
as well. But
That's craziness. I didn't realize. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Like I said, I will be the first person to tell you I'm completely ignorant on this, which is one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because I know I'm completely ignorant and I want to learn about it. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that want to hear about this process. You know, I had a lady on before that talked about an adoption, but that was straight. They couldn't have a child. They wanted to have a child. They adopted.
Sure.
This is a little, you know, I wanted to hear your story about bringing these children to your home and kind of going through that.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize that there was, like you said, like a licensing process. Now, it makes perfect sense once you say it, but I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, they kind of, I mean, the licensing process, you know, take some classes and then they do some fingerprints. You know, they're doing background checks. They ask you, like, your family history, all this stuff. So they want to make sure that these kids are going to a safe home.
Which makes sense.
You know, right, right. Yeah. They don't want to come out of a bad situation and go to a worse situation or equally as bad. So, yeah, they kind of take you through that. And
do they come to the house and stuff? Do that?
Yeah, they come to your house and kind of look around and...
Okay.
You know,
so then you said you got that phone call 3 hours later and it was a sibling. It was right. It was a pair of siblings.
Yep.
What went through your head?
We're like, I guess let's do it. We signed up.
Yeah.
To do it. And
were you really like gung ho or because I feel like if that were to happen to me, I'd have been gung ho until I got the phone call and be like, oh, crap.
Right.
No,
right.
It's for real.
Yeah. No, we were like gung ho. Then, you know, the kids came and it was like, oh, my goodness. You're never prepared, you know, exactly for, you know, kids in the first place.
What ages were those kids?
They were 1 and 2.
Okay. So still pretty little.
Yeah.
You know, being that age, that's the children have a lot of needs at that age, but they're easier as far as like, they don't have attitude yet. They haven't learned attitude yet. So
I guess there's like drawbacks for every different age and stage of the kids because they don't have attitudes yet. But they can't tell you, like, what's wrong, necessarily.
That's true.
You know, with older kids, they're just like, I don't like that. I don't want to eat that, you know?
Yeah.
That's not what I want. You know, like, oh, okay, what do you eat? What do you like? You know, and they can kind of tell you. These little kids, they just could cry. You don't know. But it is easier. Yeah, you don't get the attitude, talk back.
Yeah. I had a client of mine that kind of went the same route you did, kind of had that belief that they needed to be doing more and went to foster a child. And the child that they were going to get fostered was a 16-year-old female.
Okay.
And they had nothing but trouble with the girl.
Sure.
To the point that the girl didn't even want to be there. The girl asked to go back. She was actually in a group home. She wasn't at like with the family. She was like a group home.
Yep.
And she basically asked to go back just because that's all she'd ever known her whole life. So I can imagine, you know, I mean, like you said, children, you know, the young children like you had, you have the issues of not knowing what they need, not knowing what they want.
Right.
But then you have that other end, like you said, about like just the attitude and who knows, you know, I mean, 16-year-old girls are tough enough as it is.
Right.
Let alone trying to bring one into your household that doesn't feel like they belong there, doesn't feel like they're wanted there, even though regardless if you want them or not, they don't feel that.
Right. Sure. Yeah. I guess at no point is it a convenient thing to like, you know, if you just want a convenient, comfortable life.
Yeah, that's not it.
Like, don't do foster care. Yeah.
Don't have
like,
kids.
You know, don't have kids at all if you want a super convenient, comfortable life. But if you like want your life, I don't know, to just like to matter, to make a difference, to really feel what it's like to sacrifice. I think in our society now, we don't even know like about sacrifice. We're just like, I need everything to go my way. I need like every company that sells us a product. We take a survey, we rate everyone 1 star if they don't please me like I'm supposed to be. Like, we have no idea about, like, whatever president said, ask not what your country can do for you, what you can do for your country.
Yes.
Like, we have no concept of that. We're like, what can you do for me?
Yeah, and
what
that's
have you
it.
Done for me? And so if you're going to be that person, like, you're never going to want to do foster care. But if you're like, I want to live for something greater. You know, like, there's, like, all these epic stories.
Yeah.
I love epic stories, by the way. So, okay. Like, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I have several Lord of the Rings tattoos.
Yes, you do.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but, like, a story like that, Lord of the Rings, it's a quest.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going on a quest. I will never be the same after this. Like, I'm going to, but it's meaningful. Something important is happening here. Like, I'm going to matter, make a difference. Or, you know, and so that's kind of... I don't know, the way I look at my life.
That's an amazing analogy right there too, is to have those epic stories.
Yeah.
That's just, it's perfect for, like you said, to have that quest and to know that like at the end of this quest, you're going to be different.
Yeah.
And that is really neat. That's a great way to look at life. I've never even thought about that.
Sure. You know,
to write your story as an epic story.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
I think if you look back at your life when you're like at the end of your life, if you live to be old, we never know how we're going to die.
Yeah.
Right? If you're like live to be really old and you can look back and say like, here's how I lived my life. I didn't just waste it. Yeah. I wasn't just a consumer my whole life, but I actually did something, you know?
That's powerful. That's really powerful. You just blew my mind. The whole epic story. I'm still on that. You just blew my mind with the whole epic story.
Yeah,
you're just writing your own story.
Yeah. And the bigger thing, I guess, for me, when I look at like the scriptures again, I always bring it back in my life to that. But in the scriptures, I see a big meta narrative. I see this huge story of like, there was like a creation of this world and there was like the fall, like we rebel, there's sin, there's all this crazy stuff. But then there's like, we need a hero. You know, every story's got this like hero narrative. Yep. We need a Superman, a Spider-Man, you know, all this hero stuff in every story. And then I look in the scriptures and I see the hero, the person that came to save, like, and I see this huge story and I just get to be a part of something bigger.
Yeah.
You know, we always want, I don't know, it just seems like, okay. So in some cultures, like I look at a country like France,
okay,
for example. So France is a very secular culture, very humanistic, like, you know, and not to be pushing all my beliefs out here, but you have a lot of these kids that grow up in this secular culture, like you were created by accident, or you're here by accident. It was just evolutionary process. And now you just live your life, whatever. And all of a sudden, a lot of these kids in France are converting to radical Islam.
Yeah.
And you're like, why are these kids converting? Don't they know this is crazy? One reason is people want something bigger. They want to know that life means something. And there's a story to be brought into. And I'm not saying Islam and to be a radical Islamist is the right story. Yeah. I'm just saying there's something in people that are modern, secular, humanistic, that we're just material.
Yeah.
There's nothing else. It just doesn't give people that.
Yeah. You know? People want to be bigger, part of something bigger.
Part of something bigger.
One of the best things I've ever heard about that, maybe not about that, but one of the best things I've ever heard about this was there's a Rogan speech. Joe Rogan talks about this.
Yep.
And he talks about being the hero of your own story. You know, the hero doesn't always get to be, you know, the knight in shining armor. They have to work to get there.
Sure.
But if you want your story to be there, you need to be that hero and to be that person. And that's kind of what you're doing with your own story is you looked back and you said, this is what I need to do. You know, you might not see yourself this way. You're seeing yourself as part of just a bigger story, but you're being a hero to these children and moving forward. And you're being the hero of your story, regardless of how you see it or not, but that's how the outside world would see it, or how I see it.
Well, thanks, man.
That's true. I mean, that's just how I see it. Now, you bring up France.
Yes.
I was in France this summer.
Oh, nice.
I had a horrifying experience in France.
What happened?
We went on we were in southern France.
Mm-hmm.
All the towns in southern France are basically in the gorges between the mountains. So everything is mountainous, and all the town, to get from one town to another, you have to go over the mountain to this next town.
Okay.
So we go to France, we go to Marseille, and we're going to go to Cassis. We literally get on a bus to go to Cassis. No problem. We get to Cassis. Wonderful day in Cassis. Beautiful. On the way back, the bus driver goes, we're going to take you a scenic route, and decides to take us like this mountain pass road, but we're in a tour bus. And it's a one lane road that's two-way traffic.
Okay.
No guardrail. Super hairpin turns. At some point, the tour guide and the bus driver are arguing because I don't know, because I don't speak French.
Right.
They're arguing, and I can only guess the bus driver is not happy about taking this route.
Oh, it wasn't his idea.
No, it was not his idea. At some point, the bus driver decides to turn around. Now, mind you, this is a tiny road, and he basically has to do like the Austin Powers, like, 100-point turn to turn this bus around on this road. Now, for anybody that knows, I mean, anything about a bus, if you look at a bus, the rear wheels are farther forward than the rear of the bus.
Right.
When he was backing up, the back of the bus is off this mountain. It's a 1,000-foot drop off this mountain. And the back of the bus is off this mountain.
Were you on the back of the bus?
No, but I was close enough that we were all sick to our stomachs. It was the worst experience. That's the only thing I have about France. That's my whole memory of France is this horrifying bus ride. Like we went overseas and the whole thing is like this horrifying experience in France.
Oh.
We had a great time. We were in Spain. We were in Italy, but France. And I thought I was going to die. I didn't even know if I was going to come home because of this.
Wow.
I know that was way off on a tangent from what we were talking about.
Yeah.
But you brought it up and it made me think of it.
But we both totally convinced people not to go to France, I think.
I think that was exactly it.
I mean, yeah.
French people don't like Americans either.
They really don't. I don't think
they... Yeah, we had a couple incidences while we were there of people being pretty rude to us.
Really?
We were going to go eat at a little cafe, and we went to walk in, and they said, no, you guys sit outside. There's nobody in this place. We're like, oh, maybe they're just seating people outside. So we went and sat outside, probably waited 5-10 minutes for someone, like a waiter or somebody, to come do anything.
Right.
And after maybe, like I said, 5-10 minutes, a lady came out and told us to leave. I was like, oh, wow. You guys have to go. And we're like, well, we were going to eat. They're like, nope, you guys have to go.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just mind-blowing. We're like, what? Like, and we don't know any better. We're just stupid Americans.
Right. You know? With your white tennis shoes.
With my white tennis shoes. It didn't help that I had a shirt that said American Made Muscle Company on it. So it was pretty obvious.
All your tattoos.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious I was American.
Yeah. She was thinking America.
Yeah, America. Like, yeah. All right. So back on topic here, now that I totally derailed us. So you had several sets of foster children before you adopted the children?
Yeah, kind of in the process. Kind of in the process of adoption, we had other foster children.
Okay.
You know, that came in and out.
The children you adopted, how did that come to be? I mean, what was the process with that? Because they were foster children at that time, correct?
Yep, they were foster children. And then they have court dates, you know, every so often.
Okay.
And to see, because the goal actually is reunification with the parents.
Okay.
That's the goal, you know, of foster care.
Yeah.
Is to provide a safe home till they, you know, the parents can get their issues worked out. They can go home. So a lot of times that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so you just find out through the process that the parents' rights will probably be terminated. And then, you know, they want permanency for the children. That's, you know, the big goal, permanency, somewhere they can belong and know they belong. And, you know, it's a traumatic experience. So it was just presented to us that they're, you know, they're probably not going home, at least the little boy at first.
Yeah.
And so we said, you know, well, we'll keep him forever. You know, he'd be one of us. And then we got the call for, you know, the little girl was born, and we're like, hey, we'll take her too. We don't want her to go anywhere else.
Yeah.
We'll be with her brother, you know.
That's pretty neat. So, I mean, was it approached to you to adopt them, or did you just have that mindset of like, well, if they need a permanent home, this is going to be their permanent home?
Yeah, they basically, you know, said, hey, if it comes to it, would you, you know, be willing to adopt them, or they would find somewhere else? And we said, well, yeah, we will, we'll do it.
So. Yeah. So now as these children age, you know, you've adopted these two children. At some point, there's going to be questions.
Sure.
How do you plan on addressing these questions? I mean, do you just going to run with it, or have you guys already kind of come up with a game plan on how you want to address some questions?
So that is a good question. So I guess they're really little right now. Mm-hmm. So maybe we think, well, we got some time to, you know, to figure this out. But, you know, we want to be open and honest, you know, with the children, but let them know that, you know, family obviously isn't just about, you know, who's biological or blood family, but family's about who's there for you, who loves you,
yeah,
you know, who tucks you in at night, you know, who's gonna unconditionally be there for you.
Yeah,
you
know? And the reason I ask is because we had a kind of similar circumstance. I had a family member that married a woman who had a very small child.
Sure.
And eventually, or I don't want to say eventually, adopted that child. And that is the only father that child had ever known.
Yeah.
Up until that child's biological father passed away. And then they wanted to present it to the child that, and I know that that was, you know, I think they felt that they did themselves a disservice.
Yeah.
By not bringing it forward sooner, even though the child wasn't super old, but was old enough to kind of, I can imagine that's hard to come to grips with, even regardless of your 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess there's probably no like real good, perfect answer, you know, for that. So, and I think NBC has the show This Is Us.
Okay,
I heard that This Is Us. So it's like a phenomenon show. Everybody loves the show. Well, I happen to love the show, actually. So it's kind of like, you know, when that show was coming on, it's kind of when we took our little guy.
Okay.
You know, and so it kind of deals with a lot of certain issues with the adoption and telling and the, you know, the biological families involved. And you cry every single episode, but yeah, I think it's kind of like real life. You don't know like the right things to do exactly. There's no exact, you know, I don't know, but I think we just want to be open and honest. We try to actually have relationship with the biological family,
okay,
with grandparents and stuff right now.
Yeah.
And so we've kind of been pursuing that, you know, a little bit. And
nice.
So figure as long as our kids are safe and you know, they're not going to be harmed by it, then why not let them know where they came from? And,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I do believe that these family members of mine, I'm not going to name any names or even say relationship with these family members of mine. I think they did, you know, they understood that they did themselves a disservice, but it's such a hard topic to approach with a child, especially a child that only knows this as their parent.
Yeah. Well, here's what I'll say about that. So your family members that they adopted the child, they may have made a wrong decision.
Yeah.
Guess what? They adopted a kid. Just taking a child and loving that, you're going to make wrong decisions. And the thing about, like, especially, I don't know, Americans, we love, maybe just people in general, we love to, like, judge people and be real critical when somebody does something wrong.
Yeah.
But, like, if you are going to take foster kids or adopt kids, you're going to do lots of stuff wrong.
Yeah.
As long as you're not abusing the kids and neglect, I mean, as long as you love them and you're doing the best you can, like, don't tell me, like, you know, don't come judge me or be critical, you know, like, we need support, you know, that's what,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, families that take foster kids, we have quite a few friends, like, just in our local little, we live in a small town.
Yeah.
We can count like 15 foster families in our little town.
Really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. There's a bunch of them. And what everybody needs is just support and love and help.
Yeah.
Like, if you're out there listening and you don't even want to be a foster parent, you're like, I don't want to do that. I can't do that for whatever reason. Like, if you know somebody that is a foster parent, like, maybe, like, watch their kids so they can go on a date or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, or watch them overnight so they can go away on a anniversary thing. You know, there's different ways you can help besides just having to do foster care.
Yeah.
Although, more people should step up and be like, you know, instead of going on the internet and complaining about what's wrong with the world, just, like, do something about it. And, like,
yeah, I think more people need to, like you said, be supportive and be more positive. So many people are not positive about things. Like you said, they want to leave reviews on everything, and everybody wants to be so self-centered and self-minded. But to open yourself up, regardless if you, like you said, you want to be a foster parent or not, but just to be supportive to these, you know, to foster parents or to anybody in general.
Right.
You know, that's something that I see a lot in my own life is I have a few family members that are very supportive of my wife and I. And they will watch our children at any given moment for us.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. But then we have other family members that are very close family members that it's like pulling teeth to get them to watch them for an hour.
Right.
And, I hear you. And it's, you know, and I'm definitely not, I don't want to complain about it. I do appreciate the people we have, but it's just, you see that difference in those people and how they come forward and believe, you know, and it's just, like you said, it's just mind blowing to not see these people being supportive.
Yeah. I guess when you have so many kids, you feel like there's a kid's show called Sing, with all these singing animals and stuff.
Yep, I know exactly what it is. Oh, yes.
So Reese Witherspoon plays this mom. It's like a pig family, you know? And so she's going to go out for this. She's like the stay-at-home mom. And like my wife is a stay-at-home mom and does an amazing job. She could do whatever she wants to do.
Yeah.
She wants to be a stay-at-home mom. Awesome.
That's awesome.
So this Reese Witherspoon character, the pig mom, she calls a babysitter to watch her, you know, the little piglets or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, that's great. You're available? Awesome. I have 25. No, I'm not kidding. And the phone hangs up.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it's like when you have like, we're trying to find a babysitter for like tomorrow night for an event.
Okay.
We're like, who would want to like watch all these little kids? We did find someone
you
know, that's trustworthy and, you know, things like that. But yeah, it's difficult to
find. I can imagine that's difficult.
Yeah, for sure. Whenever, if we go on a vacation, my wife and I have decided and learned that it's good for us to go away for several days just by ourselves.
Okay.
We have to like farm our kids out to like different, you know, you stay with this friend, you stay with this friend.
I can imagine.
You come stay at our house, you know, and
So yeah, out of the eight, you have to at least get babysitters for five for sure.
Yeah, five for sure.
And then the older ones, you just need somebody to wrangle them probably.
some of the older ones can kind of fend for themselves.
Yeah.
You have an 18-year-old, you know, he's in college, you know, locally, but yeah, we don't really worry about him.
What you said, 18, 16?
18, 16, 13.
13.
The 13-year-old, you know, is in his room playing Fortnite.
Yeah, so you still got to worry about that a little bit, but
the
18, 16-year-old, they can fend for themselves for a night if need be.
For a night, yeah, for sure.
If they need be. Yeah, no, it's amazing that you guys did this, and I'm unbelievably excited to talk to you about it, or unbelievably happy to talk to you about this, because it's like I said, it's something I don't know anything about, and that's genuinely why I asked you, because I wanted to know more about it.
Yeah.
And I like to talk to you about it, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, for sure.
So with all that being said, let's clear the slate.
Yep.
If you were to start this again tomorrow, would you do it again?
I would do it again. I would hopefully, if I could go back in time but know, like, everything now, you know what I mean? Like, you go into it so excited. And you're like, oh, these kids are coming. And then, like, they have some little issues here and there. And it might not even be major issues, but they're just, like, you're not used to it. You're not used to the way, you know. And so sometimes you can get frustrated or, you know, they hate me or why don't they like, you know, like, it's me, it's not you, you know.
Yeah.
And so I guess if I could go back in time and know everything that I know kind of now and still learning, then, yeah, I would definitely do it again for
sure.
That's
awesome. Do you have any words of advice that you'd give to somebody that's wanting to go through this?
Yes, absolutely. So I hear people say a lot of times that I cannot do this. I cannot do foster care because I couldn't bear for the child to leave. And so, and you know, that's a real concern. You think about this child comes in your house, you get attached to this child, and now they have to leave at some point, most likely. I mean, there's a chance you might adopt them, possibly. I mean, but they might leave.
Yeah.
And so people say, I just couldn't do this. I just couldn't leave. You know, part of loving people is taking the risk and the chance to be hurt. Like, really, when the people say that, I can understand that and I can sort of respect what you're saying. But at the same time, like, these children, they just need a place to live. It's not about me. It's not about, like, my heart. It's about the child. That's why you do foster care. It's about providing that safe home until they, you know, they feel loved and they feel accepted. And if they go, you did your job. You gave them a loving place. So I remember one person said, my heart is just too big to do foster care because, you know, they thought their heart would break if they cut off. So my heart is just too big and I care too much. And so I didn't say this to them at the time because I didn't want to offend them. But I was commenting to my friend later. I said, because your heart is too big and you care too much, there's a child sleeping on the Department of Human Services floor tonight because he has nowhere to go. So I would just say, if you've ever thought about this, or maybe you haven't thought about this, just take a chance. Like, reach out to some people who have done it and just find out more about it at least. At least look into it a little bit if you've ever thought about it. Don't just cop out and say, I just can't do it because if they leave, I'll feel bad.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
man, that was awesome. Are you open to anybody talking to you about it if they have any questions?
Oh, I would love to talk to people, about foster care, adoption, anything. Absolutely.
What's the best way to get in contact with you if they want to do that? Email, Facebook?
Yeah, they can look me up on Facebook is perfect. So just Dalton, Dalton, Stanage, Stanage.
Awesome.
And, or my email is just mooseheadfan@gmail.com. mooseheadfan@gmail.com.
Oh, that's amazing. Dalton, I really appreciate you joining me tonight, and I look forward to doing this again.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.